The 1997 Sunstone Symposium presents session number 161, Gleanings from Utah in the 1990s, A Demographic Perspective, with Tim Heaton and Pam Perlick.
I'm Val Shelley, and I'd like to welcome you all here. We have two people who are going to share with us kind of the future and their observations on the state of Utah. Pam let me give you a little biography on her. She's a PhD in economics from the University of Utah, works in the governor's office of planning and budget, looking at long-term perspectives or projections on population here in the valley. She also was recently elected chair of the Federal State Population Projection Co-op, which works in cooperations with other governments in their population projections. She's brought high tech into our room here, so we'll get to see interesting pictures as well. And then we'll be followed by Tim Heaton. He is a sociology professor at Brigham Young University, involved with demographics. He's active with the Center for Studies of the Family at BYU, he's going to talk about the family effects with respect to population changes and our demographic evolution here in Utah. We'll take about 45 or 50 minutes, and then we'll leave a few minutes at the end for your comments or questions, I'll go through the procedure for that at that time. Thank you, Pam.
Thank you, Val. Good afternoon. It's pretty impressive to have so many people want to talk about demographics so late in the afternoon. I appreciate that. I bought a few books, actually about 10 books of some work that we're working on in our office right now. There's only four circulating right now. Six of them are propped up in front of the $5,000 projector because although it is a $5,000 projector, it has no way to raise the front of it up. So when I'm through, I'll pull those out. And if you guys are interested in some more materials like that, you can be in touch with me and I can get you some more information. Also, one other quick note, I did notice that at the closing ceremony, that your pianist is one James Coles, who is my colleague in the Office of Planning and Budget and who has been very instrumental in putting this QGET data book together. So he has he's a many-talented fellow, has multiple keyboard skills, I guess. Okay, I work primarily, all of this stuff, I wanted to do it all off of the Internet, but we weren't able to get a telephone line. So this is not actually the Internet. This is all loaded locally on my hard drive. But you can go to the Internet and see most everything that I'm showing you here. We have a web server specifically for long-term economic and demographic projection issues. Right now there's an initiative out of our office, out of the State Planning Coordinator's office, to study long-term growth trends here, what we're calling the Wasatch Mountain area, because we know that a lot of the current trends can't continue. We're running up against some, constraints. And so we're in my office. I'm pretty low down the food chain. I'm an economist, research analyst kind of person. But I'm working with a bunch of other technical people to develop tools to give decision makers a better analytical capacity to consider some important decisions about how to develop the Wasatch Mountain area. So very briefly, in the time we have together here, and as I say, this is all up on the web if you ever want to go to it and look at it, you know that Utah historically has had a fairly rapid population growth rate. We have in our office economic and demographic models that look at long-term trends, and right now we figure that Utah should get to about 3.31 million people by the year 2020, and most of those people will reside on the Wasatch Front and back, the greater metropolitan area. Took a long time to get to the first million and a shorter time to get to the second million, and it's really a lot of people. If we look at population growth rates, average annual rates of change for different decades, we can see in the pink there that Utah's average annual population growth rate has exceeded that of the nation, even when we had difficult economic times, which, for example, in the 1980s with the restructuring of various industries. And by decade, the average annual amount of increase of people, the 1970s was exceptional boom time where we had an increase in population on average of about 40,800 people per year. We're looking at increases In the 1990s, about 44,000 people per year, new people in Utah. The new people, of course, come from babies being born and people moving to the state. And then, of course, we lose population as people leave the state for various reasons, including death. So what this graphic shows you is that over time, the greatest share of the increases in population are attributable to the natural increase. That's the amount by which births exceed deaths. In case you hadn't heard, we have quite a high birth rate here in Utah. And so even in these days, when we have a lot of, migrations of people per year, the pink on average over these decades, in the 1980s, we had an average of 3,700 people leaving the state per year. Here in the 1990s, during this big economic boom time, you can see still 29,000 people on average a year increase in population is coming from natural increase, not from people moving here, and on average about 15,400 people a year moving here. So the greatest part of the population increase is coming from what we call natural increase, and this graphic is just showing you the percentages of the increase in population coming from natural increase. Part of the increase in part of that rapid rate of natural increase comes from a higher fertility rate. That is that on average women have more children than women elsewhere, but a large part of that increase is attributable to that we have more women in childbearing years. If we look here, this is what's called a dependency ratio, where we look at the number of people in these different age groups as compared to each 100 working people. And what that shows is that, for example, in 1995, for every 100 working people here in Utah, we had 15 retirement age people. That's people 65 years and over. We have 48 school age people per 100 working people, and 18 preschool age people per 100 working people. Look in 1970, where our dependency ratio then was 90 non-working age people per 100 working age people. Now, we expect that to decrease somewhat and then increase just a little bit, but the increase won't be as rapid as it is for the nation, although look at the difference. And for the nation, there's a much larger proportion of the population in the retirement years. Here you can see the aging of the baby boom. See the older component of the dependency ratio, that's 27 retired by 2020. 27 retired people per 100 working people for the nation. Here in Utah, it'll be 18. But the total dependency ratio in Utah still will be 70 as compared with 67 for the nation. So we have a young population here from 1990 to 2020. The median age for Utah, we expect it to increase to about 30, but that's far fewer than the 37 years median age that we expect to happen for the nation. Let's talk just a little bit about employment growth rates. If we look from 1950 to 2020, the average annual increases in employment in Utah versus the U.S., even when we've had slow economic times, we've still had more rapid employment growth. I can go into a lot of detail here, but I won't because it's late in the afternoon. So let's see what we want to do next. So the main point I wanted to make to you is that we have had historically a very rapid rate of population growth coming mostly from natural increase. The economic boom that we have now simply adds to that growth rate. And if you look at the industrial structure of employment here in the state, we have a very large construction sector. That makes sense, and we have historically had a very large construction sector. That goes with a growing economy, right? And our boom that we have going on right now is largely construction-driven, although there's lots of other things going on. Let me show you some resources that are on the web for you if you ever want to come look at our site. Let's go back home. I can't show you all the stuff that we have today because we're not live on the web. We're just right here on my computer. But what we have is a bunch of demographic and economic information generated by our projections model system. And in I might add, we have extensive review processes and have gathered a lot of data to put these together. It's not just a technical exercise. We talk to a lot of planners and talk to local people to make sure things make sense. If you went out there, you could pick any combination of these different tables and any different geography that you would want and generate. Actually, we have I have some that I've rigged up here because I'm not on the Internet. You can get a lot of data off the Internet, and it's dynamically created. I want to just mention a colleague of mine named Matt Austin, who's using some really nice technology here. If you work with the Internet, then you know that one of the problems is you have to pre-format all this stuff. But what Matt's done is he's figured out how to have databases and then go out and depending upon what people select, what combination of things people select, then it goes to the database, it sucks the data in, and then it generates these tables. If you're familiar with web technology, that's really kind of the neat thing to do right now. But you can get all kinds of information about Utah and projections and so forth. Let's see. Let's go back to look at age structure, something you can see on the Internet. One way that I won't concentrate on the economic unless you guys want to go back to it, but I got a lot of economic stuff on here. One way that people in demography talk about age structure is a population pyramid. And what we have here is the age distribution. At the bottom is the number of 0 to 5-year-olds or up to 5-year-olds, and these are 5-year increments all the way up here. It's an age distribution. And on the left are the males, and on the right are the females. So what you're watching here, you know, there was a baby boom in the 1980s. You can watch it work its way up. See it? See that cohort getting older and older and older? You want to see something kind of wild? Let's go back to Southwest. See how tall and skinny the Southwest, of course, that's the St. George area? Look how rapidly we expect. Here the years are ticking off. Is this making sense? Do you have questions? Okay, a tall, skinny age tree means there's a lot of older people in the population. So let's reload that one. And see this bubble up here? That is the retirement age population. But look how rapidly we expect the southwest part of the state to grow. Let me show you mountain lands. This is where BYU is. Check this out right here. This is called a standing age wave. We actually track missionaries that come and go, students that come and go. And let's reload that and watch that go. That's the that wing right there is the BYU students. Let me show you that in just a little bit greater detail. You know, your mind is actually processing a tremendous amount of information when you see these pictures. I'm going to show you in just a little bit greater detail. And this program that I'm going to show you is written in Excel with a Visual Basic program behind it, and it was written by Matt Austin, who is a colleague working with me. And these models, the model that we use is called the Utah Process Economic and Demographic Model. Let me show you. Let's go to Utah County. Anyway, these models have been around for some 20 years. Utah actually has quite a reputation for outstanding demographic modeling nationally. Okay, here's your Utah County. Here's your BYU wings here. Let's watch them go. 1990, here we are going through time and watching Utah County population grow. Just to give you an idea of the kinds of things we track and the way we look at them, here are temporarily absent residents in Utah County. Gosh, what would that possibly be? Temporary? Why would someone be temporarily absent, particularly males in their early 20s? We get data from the church, tells us about missionaries. So, here we go, our temporarily absent residents and how we track them through time. Here are the temporarily present non-residents. These are BYU students. I like this one. This is on the female side. And these are the youngsters that seem to be associated with these students for some reason. And then we track births and deaths, age-specific births and deaths. So here's a This one's kind of active in Utah County. Here, this is the births by the age of the mother and the sex of the baby. So you're seeing women having babies from, let's see what we got here, from their teens up until their 40s. And here's showing you the number of babies in Utah County across time. You want to see death, or is that too depressing? Okay, here's death. Not very much death in the younger age groups. The top age group is open-ended. Who is interested in this kind of information, would you suppose? Gosh, I get a lot of calls from marketing people. The school districts use our numbers. The planners in all different agencies, the health people apply their vital rates to our numbers. There's a fellow at the university doing the University of Utah. Sorry, Tim. And he's doing some stuff on older people and senior services, or however you want to say it. And let's look at Washington County. No, let's look at Summit County. Anyway, so they're using our projections to plan services for all different age groups. Let's look at Summit County population. Okay, now watch carefully and watch the years tick by. First of all, notice the shape of that. We've got a lot of people in this sort of middle age group. It's a much different age distribution than you see a lot of places. A lot of those people commute to the valley to work, right? Okay, so here we go. Summit County, this is your future. Wham, look at that guy grow. Oh, what was that? Let me play that for you again. Watch the years and see if you can name that. What was that? That was the Olympics. The Olympic boom bust. Let's look at Washington County. This is just to give you an idea of the detail that we go to when we put these projections together. It's not really an academic exercise. We involve an awful lot of people. Here, look at Washington County. We track non-employment-related migration. And of course, part of that is the move of people to older people to areas to retire. So here, look how we expect Washington County to grow. And you see this cave over here? It's in all of them. I call that the missionary cave. That's the temporarily absent young men that are off on missions. So this is just some of the kinds of information that we have. We have a lot of economic information, too. Okay, these baseline projections, then, what do we use them for? Right now, we have, as I mentioned to you, an initiative that was actually, it's being brought about by a lot of private people. The Coalition for Utah's Future, and there's a public-private partnership. I don't know if you've heard Robert Groh talk, and then also there's this public-private partnership. Let me find my stuff here. Larry Miller's involved, and the governor's involved, and stuff like that. People like that, big people like that, I should say. And my office is the technical people have been given some money by the legislature to develop some technology tools to help people visualize and think about growth. What we're looking at is, do we have enough water to sustain population growth? What are the land use patterns implied by this population growth? How will changes in transportation infrastructure affect vehicle miles traveled? And how will that affect air quality? See, there are modeling capabilities in all these different planning agencies, and so we're trying to more integrate those more. And what we're finding is, I'm sure this is a huge surprise to you, current trends can't continue. So part of what I'm doing is having fun making these kinds of things to demonstrate to people that current trends can't continue. So let's see. Let me show you some of the people that are involved in this effort. Here's some state people. That's my office, planning and budget. But let me show you some of the private people that are involved. It's actually going to turn into a pretty big deal. You'll probably start receiving things like in the mail. Okay, see some of these people. Governor Leavitt, Larry Miller, Robert Groh. Here's the Coalition Board of Trustees. It's kind of a who's who. Look at some of these people. It's actually quite a big effort to look at the future of what we're calling the Wasatch Mountain area. And I'm part of the technical staff developing the data for people to look at stuff. I brought some pictures to show you. Part of the effort here is to look at land use. This kind of is the bottom line in growth, isn't it? And so we have in our AGRC, our Geographic Information Service, these GIS tools. Let's see, let's find it. That's what was playing when you first came in, is this Clark, what's called a Clark model. Let's see, that one's not working. Let's try this. Here we go. This is actually a model that was used to look at changing coverages. It's not going to run for us, is it? I'll get it going. Changing coverages in areas looking at environmental factors. And we've used it here. We've calibrated it, and we're looking at the Wasatch Front area to see how land use patterns might change. I'm going to have to reload this and see if I can get it to go. But the book that I've passed out talks a lot about the all the different aspects of planning associated with growth that we're looking at in trying to understand growth along the Wasatch Front. Let's see if I can get it to go this time. There we go. This isn't on the internet yet. But the growth rules are, we went and we excluded things like federal lands, slopes above 30%, hopefully Kennecott copper and things like that, and applied these growth, kind of mechanical growth rules, where basically access to transportation, existing population centers, and then changes in transportation corridors would affect land use. And so the visualization is essentially to help you think about where people are going to, where development's going to occur.
Pam,
yes.
Would you decipher the colors as we look up there?
Yes. The colors basically are the dark orange is 100% chance of urbanization, and then as you, the lighter green is a lesser percentage, and so forth. So it's a probability of development, where the dark green is the lowest probability of development. But you can see, like up in Morgan County, for example, some pretty major changes that we're looking at. And this is in very great detail, and right here I'm showing you a macro look at it. But it's one of the, this is just one of the tools we're using to consider land use implications of population growth. Where are we going to put everybody at current densities? So I have lots of other information that I could show you. Yes. That is the punchline of the whole effort. One of the things that will limit it will be water. One of it will be just developable land. One will be that different development patterns imply different infrastructure costs. There have been some other efforts in some other metropolitan areas, such as Denver and Portland, where they've actually put cost to different kinds of development paths. For example, they found in Denver that urban sprawl was much more expensive to maintain than was some sort of satellite city developments and things like that. Another very real constraint that we're running up against is air quality, particularly in Utah County, but not exclusively. The ultimate constraint is finances. Costs of development. Yes?
Is the Mormon Church at all involved in this economic development and growth? Do they get any input or help?
That's a good question. I should look on our who's list. I don't know right off the top of my head.
I was trying to look at it when you were going through.
I was scrolling too quickly. Okay, well, I'll let's go look and see. Let's go see if who's who has. I would imagine, in order for it to be a good effort, that yes, there is some involvement, wouldn't you?
I would hope so.
Let's see, the public-private partnership. Okay, let's look more carefully. American Stores. If you read faster than me, there we go. It's quite a major effort, and what we're aiming to do is come up with growth scenarios that go out to 2050, believe it or not. And, okay, here is the public-private partnership people. And what you'll probably could get is a postcard in your mailbox someday that gives you pictures, three different pictures of development scenarios, and they're actually going to try to involve the public quite a bit in talking about, should we just let the market roll and let things develop, or should we consider open spaces, should we consider different forms of transit, whatever, whatever. So, but that will be for the political people. I will be doing the technical, the more fun technical stuff. So you can see it's a veritable who's who. Let's see. Shall I just show you... what else shall I show you? Yes, I'll show you something else here. This will give you a better idea of some of the stuff that's on the Internet that I can't really access from here. This is another program written, but this one's written in Microsoft Access. So say you wanted to know about Beaver County agricultural employment, which you would if you're studying Circle 4 Farms. Then you can dynamically extract data and look at, there's where Circle Farms, 4 Farms came in.
What's that?
This is employment.
But what is Circle 4
Farms? You don't know Circle 4 Farms?
No,
it's... Okay, have you heard about these giant pig farms that are all over in North Carolina? We got a big one out in the desert in Beaver County. And... Yes, they've had trouble in North Carolina with the pig, shall we say, byproducts. It's much less problematic here in Utah because of a lower humidity, thankfully. If you're not from here, then probably these employment numbers are not so interesting to you. But you guys who are from Utah, if you want to get up on the Circle 4 Farms... It's just a large pig production, pig farm that's out in Beaver County, Utah. When it's at full capacity, they will be producing 2 million hogs a year. And they're also talking about putting a big slaughterhouse in. So we used our demographic and economic models to study the effects of that. Let's see. Here is Beaver County agricultural location quotient. This compares... the share of Beaver County agricultural employment in agriculture with that of the nation. And what you find is after Circle 4 Farms came in, they are 14 times more heavily concentrated. Anyway, these are some of the tools, and then we take the projections out to 2020. These are some of the kinds of tools that we're using to examine growth in Utah. And for those of you who don't live in Utah right now, we're facing a lot of really tough issues as we approach some constraints. Yes?
Are you cross-matching such things as race and ethnicity along with the economic, socioeconomic scale of people? And I looked at the book you published, and it's quite... I was being personally in the study of racial minorities, I was somewhat disappointed that the dearth of material relating to the growth of the biggest baddies,
well, as for the work that we do in our office with these detailed demographic and economic models, they are very data dependent, and that kind of data over time, first of all, is very hard to come by. In fact, in most cases, doesn't exist. So we couldn't formally model it and put it in here. However, those kinds of things are always sort of in the background, or we're aware of them. For example, we know that there's a different ethnic composition associated with the Circle 4 farms. And we're aware of the migrations of agricultural workers and the ethnic composition there. I didn't do the work myself, but our office put out a study of estimates of race and ethnicity. We haven't put them into our projections, mostly because the data just simply isn't there to support it. I believe it's some of the analysts over at the health department are most interested in that data because there are different, for example, fertility rates and different incidences of diseases and so forth associated with different ethnic and different life expectancies and so forth. And I believe there's an effort going on at the health department right now to develop that data. And I better be quiet now.
Could you show us, or if you have something, the one thing that I missed as you went through this was some discussion of how income is growing here in the area. In other words, do you have data which shows, I mean, is our median income, I mean, there's an issue as to whether our quality of life is improving or not, but then aside from that, is Utah becoming a relatively more wealthy state? I think we have that perception.
You're getting at the issue of averages and distributions, and I don't have that data with me right now. Some of the economists that are at the Department of Employment Security have done research off the personal income data, but we still, in terms of per capita personal income, lag behind the nation. A lot of that has to do with the young population. This is a very good question, and I haven't seen it thoroughly researched, and that is what's happening to our distribution of income as Utah's economy develops, and how does that distribution of income differ from what's happening nationally? I would welcome, has anybody seen research on that? And if not, we should probably do some. Although I would be surprised if it would come out of my particular office, given our heavy research agenda that exists.
Do you interface along with the church and its statistical gathering capacities?
Yes. That's how we get the movement of the missionaries that come and go. And that's school enrollment.
Do you therefore have breakdowns of church membership by county? Do you get LDS versus not LDS?
Yeah, we get some secret data, yeah. at the county level.
Maybe what we can do is move on to Tim here, if we may, and then we'll kind of come back, because I think Tim has some more kind of family-related or, I don't know, maybe also religion-related information to share with you.
Still has to use the prop of the books, you see.
There's sort of a demographer's scripture parallel to the one that says, show me where your treasure is and that's where your heart is. The demography version is, show me your behavior and that's where your values are. And so based on that, we think it's very important to look at people's behavior, what they're actually doing. By looking at that behavior, we get a sense of what people really value in the things they do. And as you could tell from Pam's presentation, that can be very important as we try to make plans for the future. So in my few minutes here, I would like to talk a little bit about some of the behaviors that impressed me as I went through our volume on Utah, and also some of the conflict that's created or consequences of the values or as they're expressed by that behavior. Now, I might say a word about the basis for our discussion. For the last three decades, people at the Center for Studies of the Family have organized preparation of a volume looking at data on Utah. We try to compile as much information as we can, and in fact what we really do is try to find experts in different areas that will write about their area of expertise. And this time we were very fortunate, as you can tell, to have someone from the governor's office who really does track growth and the implications of that growth. We have information on crime, consumer preferences, education, economics. In fact, in the 1990 census, if I remember right, the per family income in Utah is not that different from the national average. And in fact, the distribution of
of people who are poor and rich is quite similar to the national average, but that's just 1990, so I can't tell you what economic growth has done to that. But economically, in a lot of ways, we're not very different. One of the things that struck me as I looked through this volume is the homogeneity we see in Utah. Now, Utah has some ethnic minorities, and we have some diversity, but overall the impressive thing is the homogeneity. And this became even more impressive as I worked on a similar volume in the state of New York last summer. If you look at New York's statistics and compare them to the nation, on the average, New York is pretty similar. But within New York is this great variation from Puerto Ricans in New York City to farmers in upstate New York. Tremendous variety within the state. Just the opposite tends to characterize Utah. That is, many of our statistics are quite different from the national average. But within the state, there's not near as much variation. And this creates a sense, I think, one of the downside of this is that many people in Utah think what they see is what is average because of the internal homogeneity. Well, everybody else is pretty much like me. In fact, if I'm grilled next week by the administration for coming to Sunstone, I think I'll have to tell them that as sociologists, once in a while, we have to know what it's like to be a minority. I think there are only two BYU faculty on the program this year. And in Utah, we really don't get that experience very often. What is it like to be a minority or to be different? Let me show you a little bit about the religious composition of the state, if I can get through here.
Do everything at once up here, can you? Can you see it now? And then it pulls off down there.
Is it still working?
Yeah.
Okay, this shows the percent of religious adherents who belong to particular denominations. So the percent is a certain percentage, roughly 15%, who say they don't belong to anything. This doesn't show that. In 1906, 87% of the religious adherents in Utah were Latter-day Saints. Can you see the dramatic change? It rose all the way to 89%. And then in 1990, all the way to 90%. In fact, you can see that the percent LDS has been virtually a constant for more than half a century, almost a century, in Utah. This is just to give you one picture of the homogeneity that exists. Very high percentage LDS among religious adherents and very little change. Now let me talk a little bit about the downside, because yesterday I had a Sudanese student who presented his doctoral dissertation, and I want to give you a few quotes from his dissertation. He studied religious minority groups in Utah County. 89% of the respondents reported they reportedly felt they had experienced a degree of discrimination because of their religious faith during their stay in Utah Valley. This atmosphere of tension and unease could be responsible for the majority feeling, 91% reported when respondents expressed that they felt a need to protect their faith more than at any time since they came to Utah. Another quote, a majority, 73% of all the unmarried respondents felt that Utah's social atmosphere offers no encouragement at all when it comes to cross-religious or cross-cultural romantic relationships. Big surprise. Close to two-thirds, 64% of unmarried respondents feel that Utah's social atmosphere offers no encouragement when it comes to cross-ethnic romantic relationships. So on one side you see the homogeneity, on the other side you feel the sense of isolation, alienation, and even discrimination that other people feel because of that homogeneity. Okay, let me talk a little bit about growth. I daresn't walk over there. You already saw this from Pam's charts, but let's put it up here again. Thanks. Now, I thought this was important again as a week ago I talked to a former high school teacher. He's a kind of Thoreau type of person that wants to live out in isolated areas, and Ridgefield is now too populated. There are too many people moving in, so he's looking for a ranch farther away where people aren't coming in. Then 5 minutes later, he's bragging about his 23 grandchildren. And he fails to see the inherent contradiction in his two sets of values. In fact, as you saw from Pam's presentation, most of the growth, a lot of the time, is because of our large families. Migration fluctuates up and down, and right now we're going through a period where a lot of people are moving in. But still, the people moving in don't match the growth because of our birth rates. So here we have, and I'm sure Pam's office has sensed that more than I have, conflict in values, a heavy emphasis on family, having children, and at the same time this resentment of the problems created by growth, and to some degree the unwillingness to deal with issues created by growth. And in fact, you can't have both things. You can't have 23 grandchildren and live on a ranch all by yourself. Okay. As long as we're talking about family, we do have a state that emphasizes family values, whatever that means. But I think in some way Utah's children do have an advantage. This top chart shows from the 1990 census the number of children ever born to women based on their education level. And we compare Utah, the first bar, with the U.S., the second bar. For people with no high school degree, in fact, women nationally average more children than women in Utah who have no degree. For every other group, Utah women have more children. And the discrepancy is particularly noticeable for people with an associate degree or a bachelor's degree in college. Now we could talk about education and participation in the dominant culture and fertility for a while. We won't. But the point I want to make is, on the average, children in Utah are born to more educated mothers, which creates advantages economically and probably in some other ways. Now, there's one other way I think that our values put children in an advantageous position. This graph shows the percent of all children who live in different types of family structures: married couple, mother only, father only, other relatives, and other. You can see that nationally about 70% of children live with a married couple. In Utah, that is over 80%. So a very noticeable difference. that children in Utah are more likely to live with a married couple. Now, I'm not trying to disparage other types of families, but on the average, children who live with a married couple have better economic resources and tend to do better in school and go farther in school and have other advantages. So, in these two important respects, I think we can feel good about the kinds of experiences our children are having and feel good about our emphasis on family. Now, let me show you one way where I don't think we can feel as good. This graph shows from FBI crime reports the rate per capita of rapes that get coded in FBI reports. We can see that in 1984, Utah's rate was well below the national average. By the early 1990s, Utah's rate has increased dramatically, and it now is somewhat above the national average. In my own limited experience, I've found that we have a culture that's not very willing to talk about rape and to implement programs. Our Attorney General has initiated a very good program, Safe at Home, to reduce family violence. But last time I had a chance to talk with her and ask her about rape, she really didn't know for sure why the rate had gone up or what we could do about it. My own experience at Brigham Young University tells me this is not a topic that administrators like to deal with and talk about and acknowledge. So, on one hand, when we look at children and some of the things they experience, we say, yes, this is a state that emphasizes family values. On the other hand, when we look at a behavior that I consider to be a very serious threat, to not just to individuals, but also to family well-being, I sense a state where there's not as much concern as there could be. Yes? For Utah, I do not have any self-report rates. And that's an interesting point. Part of the increase in these reported rates may not reflect changed behavior on the part of criminals, but maybe on the part of victims reporting or on agencies willing to deal with the problem. That would be important to know, but I haven't seen anything on self-reports. Okay, one final chart that I think shows maybe some discrepancy in our values. Utahns, by and large, are proud of their healthy lifestyles. Our rates of death due to the two leading causes of death, heart disease and cancer, are much lower than the national average, most likely because of differences in lifestyle. When we compare death rates from 1980 to 1990, this graph shows if they're below the zero line, it's where our death rates have declined or our health has improved. Where they show increases, that's where our death rates have increased. So we're getting worse. So overall, our death rates have declined during this time period. Declined especially because we've reduced accidents and cardiovascular diseases. We see the two largest increases in respiratory diseases and diabetes, and some increase in suicide. Yeah?
How about female suicide versus male in Utah compared to
the nation? I haven't looked at that. I don't know. That would be an interesting question. Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of what the difference are?
Just abstract support of Utah's first in the nation female suicide. I wonder where that's been now.
I don't know. Now, some of the reason our suicide rate is high is because of our young population. people in their late teens and early 20s have high rates of suicide, and we have more people in that age group. If you standardize for age, in fact, Utah's suicide rate does not look as high relative to the nation as if you just look at the overall rate. Still, there has been some increase. Why the increase in deaths due to respiratory diseases? So on the one hand, we won't smoke, but on the other hand, our air is not that healthy, partly in Utah County because of Geneva Still, but partly that's an issue as our traffic becomes more congested. That's an issue we're going to have to deal with. Now, maybe there's someone who's a better expert than I am on diabetes that can tell me why. What?
You're more overweight. Obesity.
So some of it's genetic, some of it is lifestyle in terms of eating habits, and some of it is stress. Okay, and the genetics probably haven't changed very much, but lifestyle and stress may have changed.
Although the genetics still may play a role, because I know in my ancestry, one of my ancestors was one of them. I think he was the first one to be in prison twice for polygamy, and he died of diabetes at that time. And so there may be a higher incidence of with the population that was here and reproducing, there may be an underlying genetic increase here. Just like certain populations, like where we live in Arizona, the Indians have the highest rate of diabetes anywhere in the world. So there may be a genetic aspect of that. Large families and families where there's diabetes over here.
Those, as I went through the book this last time, those were areas that kind of struck me as interesting. I didn't have time to talk about the whole book, but I thought I would point out a few things, and I'm done. So now we can look at maps or respond to questions.
You made one comment about the church not liking you to talk about certain things. Were you the one, I think it was a few years ago, that we talked about some rates up at the Ritz College or something as far as premarital sex? Was that related? Was that you?
My sense is that internally the researchers at the church and the people who look at research are very open. They want to know whatever they can, but externally they like to use information for public relations, and so then they want to emphasize the information that's positive, and there's plenty of that to emphasize. And I feel good about emphasizing things that are positive, too. But since it's for public relations, there's a reluctance to talk about things that are negative. And as a social scientist, I don't feel good about that kind of bias. Whatever the information is, that's what you should look at if you're going to understand your culture and if you're going to plan make Utah a better place.
Do you have any comments about the funny statistics, like a high rate of post-consumption or ice cream or things like that? It kind of goes along with healthy lifestyles. I mean, we say we're healthy, but then ice cream. Like, I guess it's from your side, but I've never heard an average statistic saying that.
We have the index, but our highest index number is not for ice cream, though it's high for ice cream and it's high for Jell-O. Okay, but it's higher for some other thing, and maybe we ought to give a prize to someone who could guess. I've tried to get statistics on drug use, and in fact, I was just talking to my uncle pharmacist who moved here from Fresno, and I asked him what the difference was. He said, well, in Fresno, when people have problems, they drink alcohol. In Utah, they get a doctor to prescribe Prozac or, well, that's not for depression. They what's the painkiller? Percodan, yeah. He said he's seen more abuse of painkillers in southern Utah than he ever saw in Fresno. I'd like to really know, though, the Rhettland, we have more kids, so we'd expect to have higher rates, but comparatively, I don't know. Marshmallows. And chocolate chips, making chocolate chip cookies, making cookies at home seems to be the area that really makes us most distinctive in, in terms of our consumer habits. Yeah.
What about the age of divorce? Again, I hear that the divorce rate in Utah is about the national average, maybe even a little higher, but I also hear that the divorce rate is dramatically lower among those who are married in the temple. Is there any figures on that?
Some, and it's hard to know for sure, because the best methodology comes from surveys, and the surveys done by the church probably are biased because they have more active participants. So it's hard to know to get an exact comparison. My sense is that over time the LDS divorce rate has increased more than the national rate, so that earlier in time, let's say in 1960, you would have seen a larger discrepancy. The late 1980s, as far as I can tell, there's really very little difference between the LDS rate and the national rate. The Utah crude rate, that is divorces by total population, is above the national average. Utahns and Mormons wait less time after they get married to get divorced, though. So lifetime experience may be different. But so one thing we see is, and you could speculate about reasons as well as I could, Mormons get divorced, it doesn't work out, and within the first 4 years, the divorce rate is apparently higher. If you make it those first 4 years, then the rate is apparently lower. Now, temple marriages are quite a bit lower, probably one-fifth, the divorce rate is one-fifth as high for temple marriages as non-temple marriages, but then that means non-temple marriages are clearly above the national average.
I'm not from Utah. I keep hearing the statistic that less than 50% of Salt Lake is Mormon, and only about 70% of the state is Mormon. Yet on your graph there, it shows that it's about 9% of Utah is Mormon.
Yeah, I should have clarified that. The chart shows among religious adherents. So you have about 15% who aren't religious adherents. Okay, then of the rest, 90% are LDS and the other 10% are, and there the distribution would be Catholics is the next largest group and then Baptists and so on. So the percents here are of religious adherents. But of the total state population, you're right, it's about 70%, and it hasn't changed very much. People who move in are much more likely to be LDS than is true of migrants nationally. And Mormons in the state have a higher birth rate. And probably people who don't like it here leave, and they're more likely to not be LDS. So those dynamics create a fairly stable LDS population.
On that same chart, if all the Protestants were collapsed into the same category, would it be more than that?
Yeah. How much more, I'm not sure, but yeah.
There was a reference in the other session about younger men leaving the church, and I think they said a number, but I don't recall it. Do you have any information about the rates which are young women are leaving the church, their activity rate?
The question was, in an earlier session, there was a comment about young women leaving the church and a trend that way. I wish I had a better number. I have not seen the church's percentages who attend Young Women's and Relief Society. There is a national survey that shows rates. Unfortunately, the samples aren't large enough for Mormons to really get a clear picture of what the trends are. So I could guess, right, since we really don't know. But my guess is, overall, the rates haven't changed over time that much, but a lot of people stop going to church when they reach late adolescence. And more we have bright, articulate women who express the reasons that they quit participating. So my speculation is that we are seeing a change, but it's not in the underlying rate. It's in the ability of people to articulate their reasons. But I don't know.
This respiratory thing, that takes into consideration the fact that the tobacco use is less in Utah, and even above and beyond that, our respiratory rate is still higher.
Okay, that graph compared the trend from 1980 to 1990. Now, our deaths from cancer are lower, okay, overall. But between 1980 and 1990, we had an increased number of deaths from respiratory problems.
And that is attributable to
air. I believe so, yeah. But maybe that's just because I live in Utah County, where it is attributable to air pollution.
Yes, that guy, what's his name from Harvard, that Utah County has been one of the places studied. Heard Steve a couple of months ago, and he said they've got some really good data on the effects on children in Utah County. You know, when
you start
back up again, it was very
dramatic. Right. This is just death rates. If we looked at kids missing school and having to go in for infections, we would see a lot larger effect.
I heard recently that by the year 2004, the number of teenagers in the United States is going to go down. You know, I don't know how much, but rather dramatic, because the baby boomers' kids are growing, and wondered if that's true. When, of course, they have implications on college population and how the missionaries. Do you have any statistics along those lines?
Pam's might be better than mine.
Well, we're not going to see the decrease, a net decrease in the number of people, teenage people. And as a matter of fact, a statistician from the criminal and juvenile justice was in my office this morning talking about how she was trying to explain to people that our petty larceny rates are up, our shoplifting rates are up, as compared to the nation. And they're trying to explain that by saying, look, we have more teenagers, and they're the ones, the incidence rates of those crimes are higher. I shut down my computer. I can't give you a number, but we continue to have growth in those age groups. Yes.
Utah had its own baby boom in the 1970s, and we're still feeling the effects of that. Now, the projections for BYU are that the number of potential enrollees will start dropping about 2002 or 2004, and maybe bottom out at about where they were in 1990. So that's not a big drop. Okay. And then probably they'll start back up again.
I think we're about to the end of our time.
Do okay.
We have more questions that we need right now? Okay, I want to thank Tim. And